I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Brent Bonwell. He's vice president of the Santa Fe Fat Tire Society. Peter Prince is also with the Fat Tire Society. He's certified crew leader for the U.S. Forest Service and an advocate for mountain biking and trails. And Jennifer Sublett is district volunteer coordinator for the U.S. Forest Service. And we're here to talk about all kinds of trails that are happening and existing and evolving right around us. Welcome, everybody, to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. So the question of, like, where these trails come from and how they stay maintained is something I had given almost no thought to until you guys suggested that we do a radio program. So what's going on? I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of trails, I guess. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's, and don't feel lonely with your thoughts if you've never given a thought. Most people don't think about who maintains the trails. We're advocates of trails. We've been working with Jennifer. Because we spend so much time on the trail, we've developed a sense for the maintainability and the conditions of the trail. So we see it all the time. Every time we're on the trail, we're very aware of what we see out there. And there's lots of trails. There's trails that are specific for certain uses that are maybe recently built, like the Flow Trail we just built here in Santa Fe. Then there's historical trails that can be, they can follow grades where people took stock from lowlands to highlands in the seasonal movement. And those trails are very hard to maintain.
But like cows?
Like cows and sheep. The Brago Trail would be an example of that. And so looking at those trails, sustainability is an issue we're always looking at because it takes effort to keep the trails in a usable condition. We have seasonal events like wind blowing down trees, and the trees need to be cleared. We have water events, so erosion removes the soil, leaves the rocks, makes trails very hard to work on. That's something that takes a lot longer to recover from. And so we're involved in that. Jennifer had the foresight maybe 3 years ago, Jennifer, when you created your trail crew leader class. And so she put together this class and called for those interested in trails to come and learn the proper techniques to move out of the shadows and into the forefront and become trained and learned in Forest Service techniques, to learn how to communicate with the Forest Service so that people aren't just out building rogue trails. We formed a partnership with that. I was fortunate in that I just moved to Santa Fe, became a member of the Fat Tire Society, and at one of their meetings they said, hey, Jennifer Sublett's going to have this training, and boom, it just happenstance that changed my life, and I've been working with Jennifer and the Fat Tire Society ever since.
Now, how do trails in, for example, the Forest Service normally get maintained? I mean, is there a crew on staff? Do you rely on volunteers? How does it work?
Traditionally in the past, we had trail crews. We had paid trail crews. There were Forest Service employees that would actually maintain trails. But with declining and dwindling budgets, we have had to turn to the public more to ask for help. If they want to have sustainable trails, you know, they need to get out on them and actually help out. And we appreciate everything that they do. So it's anything from trail adoption, which could be a couple times a year, to one-day work days. We have volunteer vacations in the wilderness. And there are multiple-use trails, and so we keep that in mind. And the Fat Tire Society does a great job of keeping that in mind as well. And so we maintain for hikers, mountain bikers, and horseback riders.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, so many different kinds of people using the trails, and those uses aren't necessarily entirely compatible.
They're largely compatible.
Are they?
Actually, yeah. The instances of negative interaction between different user groups is really very small. You know, there's bad apples in every group, but overall everybody is very friendly, you know, gets along well between the different groups. The Santa Fe Fat Tire Society, we've actually adopted over 5 miles of the Windsor Trail that we're responsible for maintaining in coordination with Jennifer. We also do work on other sections of trail. We're going into year three of a bridge building project. We're looking to build bridges across all the Windsor Trail crossings of the Big Tasuki Creek. which extends the season, makes it safer for people to try to cross when it's cold or, you know, cross on slippery logs, et cetera. So it's really a lot of that's for hikers, et cetera.
I know those slippery logs.
You know those slippery logs, yes. Well, we've built 9 bridges so far. Everything above the Chemisa Windsor Trail intersection is now bridged up to the ski area. We're working from the bottom of the Windsor. We've built 4 bridges in the bottom lower section of the Windsor from the Bishop's Log to Suki area. And we're working our way up. And now you're building bridges 2 to 3 miles from the trailhead, so getting materials in there is a much bigger challenge, but we're continuing with that. But those are examples of where we as a club, because we value access to those trails and we like to use those trails, but we understand that's a multi-use trail and we need to make sure that that what we do is appropriate for all users. You know, the motto of the Santa Fe Fat Tire Society, which is essentially a mountain biking club, is any friend of mountain biking is a friend of ours. And so that's part of our DNA and our makeup, is that we want to interact and be good neighbors with other users.
Who are the friends of mountain biking that aren't mountain bikers?
Hikers. You know, we get a lot of hikers out to help with trails. You know, the horse people actually have offered to haul materials up for some of these bridges that are farther in there. Just anyone who supports access for us on the trails and is, you know, happy to share the trails with us, you know, we consider them friends.
What are some of the rules of etiquette for mountain bikers, hikers, and equestrians who are sharing sometimes quite narrow spaces?
Generally, the equestrians have right-of-way, and the bikers should yield to equestrians and to hikers. The hikers typically have right-of-way. Typically, what happens is that, you know, you see each other say hi as you approach other hikers, and they, because it's easy for them to step to the side of the trail as opposed to dismount the bike, they generally get out of the way of the cyclists. Mountain bikers, but technically, according to the trail etiquette, is that hikers have right of way over bikers, and that both hikers and bikers should yield to equestrians.
One of the things that I thought was interesting is that ski areas, which are basically not doing much in the summer, have now had a kind of almost like renaissance of trail use.
Correct. That's been a big adaption of the industry where ski areas have realized they can have ticket sales in the summer. They've worked typically with the landholder, which is the Forest Service, to extend the season by offering tickets and the ability to carry bikes to the top. So people aren't riding their bikes to attain the elevation. They're riding a chairlift. They unload the chairlift, and then they go to maintain trails that are built within the ski area boundaries.
Yeah, so it's almost like downhill skiing. You take a ride to the top and you coast down.
And it's called downhill biking.
Yeah. Yeah, right? It really is called that?
It is,
yeah.
And it has very specific equipment. People wear a lot of protection. And that's where we start to see some flow over when people are trained, when they learn their etiquette of riding a bike at a lift-served area, and then they move over into multi-user space, like on the Windsor Trail. Then we start to see some sensitivities because they believe that those trails are maintained the same way that they are at a ski area, and they're not. They're maintained by volunteers, and there's also other users that come through there. And so if they're going to ride in the way they do at a lift area, they need to use care and caution because it can be startling to have someone come at you at a very high rate of speed if you're out hiking. And those are the type of things where we try to promote that. And I know the local mountain bike clubs, or not clubs, but the shops here in town, they're very aware of that, and they try to talk to their patrons that come in and say, hey guys, you know, use caution when you're on the trails. And those are the type of things the Fat Tire Society really wants to promote, is it's not the user groups, it's the individuals that have conflicts. And so we need to train the individuals to be cautious.
Yeah, it's really like bicycling on the streets of Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. I mean, bicyclists have a lot of trouble with cars, but I see bicyclists also going the wrong way and not stopping at stop signs, and so we all have to educate ourselves.
Similar kind of things, yeah.
Yeah.
And we pass out bells, you know, so you have a little bar bell, so you can ding-ding, you know, a bell as you approach people so they're not, you know, so they're aware you're coming up, so they're not as surprised.
Yeah.
It's a little different because you want to make sure that, you know, it's a friendly bell. It's an informational thing. It's not a, hey, get out of my way, but it's, hey, I'm here.
Right.
Because it is startling for people. And what bikes can do is really amazing. You know, the brakes that they have now, they, virtually all mountain bikes have disc brakes, which are very, very powerful. You can stop very, very quickly. But it's still, as Peter said, it can be very startling for people to see you come around a corner and you're going 10 or 15 miles an hour, and you can stop in just a matter of feet. But they see you, and it's like,
right.
You know, they're coming. And so it's definitely education and that positive interaction between the individuals. And the bells do help, just to let people know that you're coming.
Now, mountain biking has evolved quite a lot over the last few decades.
Yeah, I had summarized that as four generations of mountain biking use, where the first generation was when people just rode whatever kind of bike they had. They wore jeans, they wore flat-soled shoes, and they rode fire roads, and then they started putting in these rogue trails, and that was the first generation of people just discovering how fun it was to ride a bike. Then the second generation was where we started having mountain bike-specific equipment for sale. And all of a sudden, the industry came up and said, wow, we can serve a need here. And they came out with very specific bikes. And that was also a time where mountain bike users started to get together and form organizations like IMBA, the International Mountain Bike Association, because there was a backlash and we were losing access to trails. So this advocacy role developed. Then the third generation was what we already spoke about, where lift-served terrain was opened, and that very specific equipment, that's a very different type of equipment, that came through. And now we're having these bike parks where it's a very, maybe 25 acres within a city limit that offers all sorts of biking experiences, and the young kids are learning how to be airborne on bikes at a very early age. And I'm wondering, how are those children going to be satisfied? What is their ride experience going to be when they're 16, 18, 25?
What do you mean when you say airborne?
Well, there's typically they will build ramps just like in a skateboard park, and they're built out of metal and wood. They have very physics defines a geometry, and kids will ride down a hill, hit these ramps, and launch their bike in the air. They'll be doing spins and flips and all sorts of MX-type moves. And you see little kids doing this, maybe 8 years old, 10 years old. And
wow.
Where are they going to be when they grow up?
It's very similar to skiing. In our generation, it was like you went downhill skiing, and now it's the terrain parks, and you see all the half-pipe competitions and that kind of thing. So skiers, especially younger kids, they're airborne on skis all the time, too. And it's a similar kind of thing with the bikes, where there's bike-specific things like these bike parks and features that they like to play on. So it's not just riding trails with them. It's, using these bike terrain parks. Similar to the skiers, the kids not just skiing down doing run after run. They'll actually go to a terrain park and hike up and ski down, and hike up and ski down, hike up and ski down. And it's very similar in that regard.
Now, these bike parks where 8-year-old children are airborne, where do they exist? Do we have one here?
Yeah. Over in La Tierra Trails.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And so there's a very extensive bike park in there that's been built up over the years, and the city has adopted that and said, we will allow this to happen. We encourage it to happen. They have competitions.
And you can go sit on the ground, look up in the air, and see flying children.
You can sit in stadiums.
They have
stadium seating over there.
Yeah. We just built a brand new type of trail. It's a one-mile segment of trail in La Tierra. It's called the Flow Trail. It's kind of like a roller coaster for bikes. Bank turns, little bumps and stuff, and we needed water to compact the soil. So I'm over filling up a 400-gallon tank in one of the free ride areas, and a little kid, 10 years old, and he comes zipping along the trail. He goes off a 4-foot drop, and then he goes over these jumps, and he's trying to make sure he hits the second one, and he's not quite making it all the way over, and I just watch him for half an hour while the tank fills up, just sessioning that thing, just going over and over until he finally got it. It was just great to see. And his mom was over there watching. She brought him out, and he just goes and rides there and just has a great time.
Now, Santa Fe has gotten a certification from the International Mountain Biking Association, which is a silver certification. What does that mean?
They offer certifications for ride centers. And so when we apply, there's a 100-point scale, of which about 40 points is related to the community support, access to trails, the type of trails, and about 60 points to the riding experience. the trails, the miles of trails that are available, the different types of trails that are available to riders. And Santa Fe got enough points in that system to qualify as a silver level ride center. We're only about 10 in the country, in the world, actually.
In the world.
There's only one gold level center, and that's actually what Santa Fe would like to become eventually, is a gold level center, which there's, like, so the Park City, Utah is the only gold level center in the world.
Interesting.
And there's about 10 silver level ride centers in the world, of which Santa Fe is one.
Now, does that bring economic development? Does that bring people coming in to use Santa Fe as a riding place?
It does.
Exactly. Yes.
And so you look at some other silver levels. We have Jackson Hole, Sun Valley. You know, these are heady places, tourist destinations. And so for Santa Fe to receive that silver level ride center designation, it puts it on the list of, you know, that's where I want to go. It's your bucket list of ride areas.
Yeah. So from the perspective of the Forest Service, what is your relationship like with all these other organizations like mountain biking societies and so on that are interested in having good trails?
Well, since I got here about 6 years ago, it's actually grown, the relationship. The different partnerships have grown, and the Forest Service has benefited every year since we actually started allowing volunteers in the forest. And that sounds strange, but since 1972, it's the Volunteers in the Forest Act. There's some legalities there, volunteer agreements, et cetera. But every year, the forest volunteers pack a punch. They put a lot of time in, and we get a lot of work done. My focus is trails and recreation. So last year it was over 12,000 hours between the two districts that I work on, which is from Los Alamos to Las Vegas. So there's about 500 miles of trail in there, including wilderness. And we get folks that are retired. We get folks that are 18 years old. They are in college. They want to be a volunteer wilderness ranger. It really just depends on how you want to fashion your volunteer experience. If you have skills, that's great. If you don't, we can teach you. One great thing about Brent and Pete is that they're in a Sawyer group, and so they're definitely chainsaw, and Pete's also cross-cut certified, and we get the word out. And if people report there's a tree down on the Borrego Bear Wallow, well, then one of them is out there within a day or two to get that taken off the trail. So that's huge. And
yeah.
Even if we had trail crews, paid trail crews, they're usually around in the summer months, but on the shoulder seasons, we don't have that. We didn't have that in the past, but now we do. And I think even if for some miraculous reason we were able to get funding, I know we would still utilize volunteers because it just adds to the mix and the benefits that everybody gains from this opportunity.
Now, are you looking for new volunteers all the time?
All the time I'm looking for new volunteers. Absolutely. And I would like to highlight National Trails Day. It's coming up on June 6th. We are working on a reroute on the Windsor Trail. We're continuing work on that. The Santa Fe Fat Tire Society has put in a lot of time on that trail, and we will continue to do so. But National Trails Day is it's a national event. It's sponsored by American Hiking Society. And you can actually go on nationaltrailsday.org and look up opportunities in this area and all over the country if you want to help out. But we'd love to have you out from 9 to 3 on June 6th. Just call me.
Excellent. Well, we will give your number at the end of this show. Now, there is a kind of, a harmony and loving mutual relationship between bikes and beer.
That is so true.
Yes.
And that's May 13th is the Bike and Brew Festival, which is coming for the second year here to Santa Fe. It's a big event. It's a lot of fun, and it celebrates bicycles and beer, and it's a festival to get together. We have the local community of restaurants. Many of them are offering specialized meals where they're pairing a beer or several beers with what the chef is going to be putting out that night. There will be movies. There's all sorts of bike rides. We have toured breweries where we will ride from brewery to brewery to brewery. We have...
Does it affect your riding by the time you get to the fourth brewery?
It gets slower.
Yeah.
But it's so unique. These typically have 30 or 40 people in a group. And I participated last year. I helped at the intersections to make sure everyone could go through an intersection. You know, if the light would change, right? We go on a green... We get half the group through, the light changes, I'd be out in the intersection stopping traffic to let everyone else go. But it's so empowering to be with a group of 30 or 40 bicycles instead of just by yourself. It just feels so different. It's so joyous. But it's safe. We choose good routes. We ride south. We go downhill, and we come back on the train. And the way back is, you're sitting down and riding the train and watching the scenery go by.
So it's another example of downhill biking.
Downhill biking, exactly.
So this Bike and Brew phenomenon starts actually the day after tomorrow, Wednesday the 13th of May, and goes for, several days?
Through Sunday the 17th.
Okay.
It kind of culminates as far as the cycling events on Sunday. That's the Santa Fe Century.
What is the Santa Fe Century?
Santa Fe Century was started 30 years ago. It's actually the 31st running, but it was started in 1985. By the bike club that was here at the time. I was actually the event director the first 2 years, and then it was taken over by Willard Chilcrot, who grew it from more of a racer-centric event to just come out and ride 100 miles. So a century is a 100-mile ride.
Anybody can do it. But
well, you see the people. I actually live off 285, which is where the route ends up, and I see people out there at 4 or 5, 6 o'clock at night struggling to come home, and it's just so amazing to see these people. Most of them, it's their first time they've ever done a century. They don't have great bikes. They're obviously not as fit as the fast guys that finish in 5 hours. But it's just amazing to see them just working so hard to achieve it. And, that's always more impressive to me than somebody who can do it in 4.5 or 5 hours, is the person that's willing to, that not necessarily prepared for it or ready for it, but they're willing to go out there and do it and stick in there for 10 hours or 12 hours and just keep pedaling. It's an amazing thing to see. You can get more information about the whole Bike and Brew and all the festivities and activities are going on at Outside Santa Fe. Outside Magazine is one of the big sponsors of the event, and so Outside Santa Fe is the website, but it's everything from the Tour de Brewer, there's a chocolate tour, the 100-mile bike ride, there's actually a kind of a downhill mountain bike race out in Glorieta, there's a jump jam where you can see professionals flying 15, 20 feet into the air. I believe that's Wednesday night the 13th or Thursday the 14th.
There's concerts.
There's movies. There's beer tasting. There's a hand-built bike. It's hand-built crafts. It's hand-built bikes and craft beers together in a show one of the nights. So there's a lot of fun. You don't have to be a biker. You don't have to be a beer drinker. You just have to enjoy having a good time. And there's an event for you somewhere in the schedule.
Excellent. So if somebody wants to become part of the Fat Tire Society, how do they do so?
We have a website, SantaFeFatTireSociety.org. We're a chapter of the IMBA, the International Mountain Bicycling Association. So when you join IMBA, you can join our club. We coordinate through the Santa Fe Trails Alliance, which is another organization that supports all sorts of youth. And we all coordinate our trail work days through Santa Fe Trails Alliance. And so their website also has information on trails and joining the different clubs.
Excellent. And Jennifer, if people want to become trail volunteers, what should they do?
They should call me at 505-753-7331. My email address, too, is jasublett@fs.fed.us.
Excellent. And I will try to link to everybody's website on my website, SantaFeRadioCafe.org. Brent Bonwell, Peter Prince, and Jennifer Sublett, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.